whole day through. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia on my mind, Georgia, Georgia. A song of you comes as sweet and clear as the moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly. Still in peaceful dreams, I see the road leads back to you. The road leads back to you. Georgia, Georgia, Georgia. No peace I find. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Welcome to the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester, and thank you so much for tuning in once again, and thank you so much for the over 60,000 downloads so far of the Jazz Treasury podcast. Just to let you know, to be upfront, a lot of the information we're getting for this episode is from the Jazz Greats magazine, put out by a Marshall Cavendish Leisure Collection back in the late 90s when I lived in Britain. I was able to collect every single one of these magazines and recordings, and that's close to 65 issues. And a lot of the information you find on the Jazz Treasury comes from the Jazz Greats magazines, comes from biography.com, from record albums that I've collected, from biographies that I've read. So it's a mix of information. I want to make sure everyone gets their due. And that opening track you just heard was Nat Gunella doing Georgia on My Mind. That was recorded in London in 1934, written by Hoagie Carmichael, of course, between 1932, when he first recorded it, and 1938, when he stopped counting. Nat Gunella reckons he performed Georgia on My Mind 5,000 times. This tune was his feature with Lou Stone, and on the odd occasions when he omitted, a request would come often from the Prince of Wales for Nat to play Georgia. Although Decca Records complained about the appalling vocal refrain, it was an enduring hit with the public. Let's see who played with Nat on that one. We had Nat Gunella on trumpet and vocal, Brian Lawrence on violin, Mania Leiter and Eddie Carroll on piano, Harry Wilson on bass, Bob Dryden on drums. Once again, Georgia on My Mind, 1934, recorded in London. A little bit more about Nat Gunella. Born 1908, both Nat and his younger brother, Brutz, played trumpet in several of the major bands of the 1930s. Nat's big break came with Billy Cotton in 1929. He joined Red Fox in 1931 and Lou Stone in 1932, as well as touring with Ray Noble. His membership of these bands overlapped. He led his own Georgians from 1934 to 1939. and continued to lead bands until his health forced him to give up trumpet and concentrate on singing, which he was still doing in the mid-1990s. And on this episode of the Jazz Treasury, we're looking at jazz in Britain, the early years. And to many enthusiasts, the early years of jazz in Britain were marked by visiting Americans bringing their music to the UK or releasing significant records. But this overlooks the flowering of a remarkable local talent as British musicians such as Bert Ambrose and Jack Hylton overcame their stereotypical reserve and inhibition to bring forth some of the most freewheeling soloists and hard-swinging bands to be heard outside the USA. By the time of World War II, when American servicemen and their music were a commonplace of British life, local musicians had proved they could hold their own with the originators of jazz. Among the first generation of British jazz musicians, there were some remarkable soloists, including trumpeters Norman Payne and Tommy McCorder, trombonists George Chisholm and Lou Davis, and saxophonist Freddie Gardner, Buddy Featherstonoff, and Poggy Pogson. Pianists such as George Shearing and Yorkie D'Souza took ideas from American jazz and made them their own, while many of the country's leading band leaders loved jazz. Although few of the great pre-war orchestras were out-and-out jazz bands, leaders such as Ambrose, Lou Stone, Spike Hughes, and Jack Hylton were among those who recorded plenty of convincing and memorable jazz. In the days of empire, music and musicians from many parts of the world came to London as curiosities, with attitudes that seemed racially biased, undiscriminating, and insensitive to the modern mind. The Victorians adopted images of black Americans based on the white caricatures of minstrel shows. Major Dumpleton's Ethiopian Serenaders, who came to Britain in 1848, were the first of these, followed by Stephen Foster's Christy Minstrels and Thomas Rice's Jim Crow Dancers. The preface of Negro Minstrelsy, published in 1861, declared that such music has yearly increased in popularity until it may be truly said to have become established in the favor of all classes. All right, let's listen to another tune here. A gentleman named Sid Phillips. And Sid Phillips recorded this piece with his quintet. He recorded Royal Garden Blues in London in 1941. And this features Leslie Jiver Hutchinson on trumpet, Sid Phillips on clarinet, Arthur Berkby on tenor sax, Yorkie D'Souza on piano, Max Abrams on drums. London, 1941. Let's listen to Sid Phillips' quintet doing Royal Garden Blues on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. was Royal Garden Blues, Sid Phillips Quintet. After a corny Dixieland opening, this piece opens up as a romping swinger, with Jiver Hutchinson's trumpet emulating the style of American jazz players such as Sidney DeParis. Phillips himself is firmly in the Goodman mold, while the unsung hero of the track is Yorkie D'Souza on piano, a player who remained active on the London scene until his death in 1986. Many histories of jazz give the impression that when the original Dixieland Jazz Band arrived in London in 1919, jazz arrived with them, out of the blue. In fact, there were already noisy ragtime-based ensembles calling themselves jazz bands all over the West End. The original Dixieland Jazz Bands were billed as the creators of jazz, so they would stand out from the crowd. Among these early bands were some musicians who were already beginning to be aware that this was a completely new style of music. Most accounts of New York's jazz scene talk of the gatherings outside Harlem's Rhythm Club, where musicians picked up work. A similar meeting place was established in London, in Archer Street, a short, narrow road off Great Windmill Street. In all but the worst weather, the street would be jammed with musicians looking for employment. No one knows why it became the musicians' mecca, but by the early 1940s, young hopefuls such as Ronnie Scott mingled there with exceptional professionals such as his own father, saxophonist Jock Scott. But it was not only jazzmen who came to Archer Street. Musicians came to see what was on offer in theaters, music halls, dance halls, holiday clubs, and the occasional recording session, and hear about the latest records, musical styles, and news of colleagues. Archer Street jazzmen knew the latest taste from the USA, even if they seldom got the chance to play such sounds themselves. After the 1950s, the street scene just faded away. More musicians were on the telephone. The musicians' union itself ran a clearinghouse for gigs. And the social benefits of gathering in the drizzle to discuss saxophone reeds and trumpet mouthpieces seemed less attractive in the prosperous 1960s. All right, let's move on. Let's listen to a Billy Cotton track here on the Jazz Treasury. Billy Cotton and his band doing the Uptown Lowdown. This is a big band, recorded 1933 in London, and it features Billy Cotton as a director and vocalist, Brutz Gunella, and Eddie Fearn and Teddy Foster on trumpets, Ellis Jackson, Tommy Ward on trombone, Edgar Bracewell, Frank Kenyon on clarinet and alto sax, Frank Barnes on clarinet and tenor sax, Mike Burberry on alto sax and baritone sax, Laurie Johnson and Phil Phillips on violin, Clem Bernard on piano, Les Casey on guitar, Joe White on bass, and Arthur Baker on drums. There's a big band for you. Let's listen to Billy Cotton and his band doing the Uptown Lowdown on the Jazz Treasury.
Social devs and high Hattie lights, masses, classes, doing the uptown lowdown, where they spend their sea moleons just to watch those creep oleons skipping, hipping, doing the uptown lowdown. You'll find laughter after midnight, that's their playtime. Heidi, heidi, hey time. What price? Yeah, man. Bankers with their cinderellatives listening to those hot hiatives up in Harlem, doing the uptown lowdown. Swing boys, now you find laughter after Bobby time, that's the playtime. Katie Haytime, what price? Yeah, man, bankers with their superlatives, listening to those hot high relatives up in Harlem, doing the up down low down.
Listening to the Jazz Treasury Podcast with Rich Sylvester.
Doing the Uptown Lowdown, Billy Cotton and his band, recorded in London, 1933. Spike Hughes always portrayed himself as an amateur band leader, while Billy Cotton was a supreme professional. The Cotton Band was a show band, yet Billy's passion, along with racing cars, airplanes, and football, was the sound of the great U.S. jazz orchestras. Here, especially in the magnificent Out Chorus, his band gets remarkably close, even if pianist Clem Bernard is not as jazzy as the vocalist suggests, and the singing is pure British music hall. Another contender as a first-rate arranger was pianist Lou Stone. Stone had band-leading thrust upon him in 1932, when the whispering cornetist Roy Fox, who led the band at the Monsignor, was taken ill. Within a short while, his broadcasts were being hailed by Edgar Jackson in Melody Maker as staggering, with an extraordinary degree of instrumental finesse and really intelligent programming. Stone had the advantage of employing soloists such as trumpeter Nat Gunella, trombonist Lou Davis, and reedman Harry Burley, as well as Britain's most popular jazz-styled vocalist, Al Boley. His real talent, though, was in arranging with flair and imagination and in coaxing exceptional performances from his men. We're talking about Lou. Let's listen to some Lou Stone. This is Lou Stone and his band at the Monsignor Restaurant, the Garden of Weed. I wonder what that could mean. Recorded 1934 in London, and it features Lou Stone as director, Alfie Nokas, and Nat Canella on trumpet, Joe Ferry and Lou Davis on trombone, Joe Crossman and Ernest Ritt on clarinet, alto sax, and baritone, Harry Burley on clarinet and tenor, Monica Leiter on piano, Harry Sherman on guitar, Tiny Winters on bass, and Bill Hardy on drums. Let's listen to Lou Stone and his band at the Monsignor Restaurant doing Garden of Weed on the Jazz Treasury.
Thank you.
Garden of Weed, Lou Stone and his band at the Monsignor Restaurant, recorded London, 1934. Lou Stone's somber arrangement of Reginald Forsythe's composition shows a grasp of texture and orchestral color that compares favorably with Duke Ellington. The clarinet weaves across the deep tones of the baritone. The piano contrasts with the ensemble as the bass underpins the rhythm. The unaccompanied reeds are particularly effective before the clarinet snakes out of the ensemble riffs. In 1945, only a few of the pre-war clubs reopened for business, and jazz moved out of these rarefied surroundings to the theater circuit, the dance halls, and the kind of smoky clubs that had been reserved for after-hours get-togethers in earlier days. There was a change in the music, too. Close contact with Americans, the influx of discs from the USA, and the huge mood of change sweeping popular music led to two movements in jazz. As the 1950s began, one camp of enthusiasts, grouped with George Webb and his Dixielanders, whose Kentish sessions sought to recreate the classic sounds of 1920s Chicago, while John Dankworth, Ronnie Scott, and the Archer Street musicians followed unerringly in the new directions set by Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. Jazz had become a global music, at least in part due to UK players. As the 1950s began, a new generation of such players was ready to step onto the global stage to represent the best of both the old and the new. I'd like to play a track by Ambrose. In contrast to Stone and Noble, Bert Ambrose was never a jazz musician. An expert violinist and leader, he played dance music. That was the favorite entertainment of the crowned heads of Europe. On one occasion, he was summoned home from holiday by a telegram from the Prince of Wales, recalling him to lead the dances at the Embassy Club. Ambrose also used radio to break through to a vast UK audience. He had to leave his residency at the Mayfair Hotel after 5 years because the establishment clientele were being edged out by hordes of nice people from the provinces, as he put it. Ambrose hired some fine jazz musicians to play in his band, including trombonist Eric Breeze, George Chisholm, and trumpeter Tommy McCorder. Yet even a band as famous as his carried no real social cachet. The musicians were forbidden to mingle with the crowds, and despite being household names, were treated in the hotels and halls where they played as no better than the kitchen staff. Let's listen to some Ambrose right now. Ambrose and his orchestra. Cotton Pickers Congregation, recorded in London, 1937, and it features Bert Ambrose as a director, Tommy McCorder and Alfie Noakes on trumpet, Lou Davis, Eric Breeze, and Les Carhu on trombone, Danny Polo, clarinet and alto, Sid Phillips, clarinet, alto, and baritone, Joe Jeanette on clarinet, alto sax, flugelhorn, Billy Amstel on clarinet and tenor, Norman Cole and Ernie Lewis on violin, Bert Barnes on piano, Albert Harris on guitar, Tiny Winters on bass, Max Bacon doing the drums. And there's an unknown vocal chorus in here. Let's listen to Ambrose and his orchestra, Cotton Pickers Congregation, recorded in London, 1937. Thank you. That was Cotton Pickers Congregation, performed by Ambrose and his orchestra. Ambrose employed many of Britain's best jazz musicians. This programmatic piece by Sid Phillips gives several of them a chance to be heard, with Danny Polo on clarinet and Billy Amstel on tenor. It recreates the image of a Southern prayer meeting, with Lou Davis's trombone emulating the preacher and Tommy McCorder leading the choir of massed brass. Tell you about a few recordings you might look for, some recommended listening for your jazz library. There were so many fine players in the early years of British jazz, it has not been possible to include them all. So here's a selection of tracks by bands worth seeking out. Joe Daniels, Fats in the Fire, 1941. Geraldo's Swing Septet, Russian Salad, 1941. And Harry Roy's Tiger Ragamuffins, Harlem, 1937. Okay, now for something a little bit different on the Jazz Treasury podcast. I have always played the roots of jazz, music from the roots of jazz from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. There is currently an explosion of jazz happening in London and in Britain, and it's going worldwide, and it's fantastic to hear. There are people stepping up to keep the flame of jazz alive, and one of those peoples is Shekaba Hutchings. Recently picked up a CD called Your Queen is a Reptile, performed by his band, the Sons of Kemet, and some musicians to keep an ear out for. Shekaba is a saxophone player, but also featuring tuba by Theon Cross. Drums, he likes to play with two drummers. Moses Boyd is a name to look out for. All right, let's listen to a track now from Shekaba Hutchings off the Sons of Kemet CD. Let's listen to My Queen is Anna Julia Cooper on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. That's all for this edition of the Jazz Treasury. Hope you enjoyed it. The next episode of the Jazz Treasury will focus on early bebop, so stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for listening. Please go to our Facebook page, Jazz Treasury Podcast. Give us a like. Tell your friends, tell your family that jazz is back, and really happy to hear that. Till next time on the Jazz Treasury Podcast, enjoy the jazz.